Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman? As you can see on the stream and listening on the radios, got a special guest in, every week, obviously, of a game. Jason Peter, former Blackshirt, and knows a little bit about D-line play. And we'll jump right into that, Jason.
I'd rather talk about the Mike Lombardi stuff going over to, he must not know. You got to go over there with some Saran wrap or some glass plates and, let those do. If you really want some money,
you got to get in the fight ring.
That's
right?
How all those OnlyFans girls are going over there and getting paid. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, we'll deal with that. Jason, what do you think about, me and you, both of us have lived in Charlotte.
Right.
Both of us know how much money there is in Carolina in general, but more importantly, down in Chapel Hill. Yeah. What do you think about him and his, he hadn't only been there for a few months.
Right.
That his first objective is to go overseas to raise money. Does that mean that they were having problems internally? Because the AD is out of there, and he's a big money guy. So he's like, we got to get some money somehow?
I mean, wouldn't you think, living down there, like, you have Carolina, you have Duke. I mean, those are the two big boys where people have so much pride for their alma mater down there. You know, like they just are all kind of that baby blue, or they're, that Duke blue. And like you said, there's money. So I don't know why you pack the jet and you go overseas
that quick before training camp.
Right. I mean, doesn't make any sense. And especially with Belichick coming in there at that point in the season, everybody had to have been excited, we got a guy here that he's going to bring us back. And so, that's an odd decision. I don't know a ton about Lombardi, but
he's not well liked in the NFL realm. And that's, how that is, sometimes, that could be fairly, but I think also, Jason, this, and we talked about this outside of the studio, is that their athletic director, who, correct me if I'm wrong, Austin, is about to resign, or he's,
and 6 months or something. Yeah. Something like that.
Is a big money guy himself.
Yeah.
Supposedly it wasn't his choice for Belichick. It was like the powers that be.
Right.
So with that being said, Belichick and Lombardi and company coming in, they probably know, like, I can't go, you can't go to the AD and say, okay, well, who's our best donors?
Yep.
So you probably had to go somewhere else.
Yeah. I'm sure that handcuffed them, to some degree. It's just crazy to kind of just overstep the athletic director totally on a hire like that. I mean, I'm guessing that you probably could have talked him into it as well.
Yeah.
The fact that you're dealing with Bill Belichick here. You'd think it would be an easy sell. He may kind of, counter it a little bit and say, well, for all the positives, we also have these negatives. Guy hasn't been in a college game in God knows how long. He's kind of old. He's got, his life is kind of a distraction.
Right.
Yeah, but that was a ballsy move to go over the head of Cunningham. Is that what you said?
Yeah, Cunningham. Yeah, a big NASCAR guy and obviously a money guy. And you speak of distractions. I mean, obviously, we know that potentially Coach Rule's name is, and just whether it's perception or reality, tied to, you know, the Penn State and, you know, potentially some other jobs. From our, talk about from our experience, because we dealt with our own distractions.
Right.
Talk about how important leadership is when it's time to really just really get everybody in the guardrails and lock in and understand the main thing is the main thing, and that's to play good football.
Yeah. I mean, we had obviously some off the field incidents. Then it kind of turned into an attack on T.O. Because he was letting, you know, some of these guys play. Yeah. And it really has to come from the player leadership.
Yeah.
Right. It has to come from inside that locker room and not necessarily the head coach standing up there and saying everything, but it's got to come from the players. And, you know, your captains are obviously, some of them are young. Do they know how to handle something like this? You know, it's more than just getting up saying, that's our coach. You know, like there's more to it than that. And it's a constant thing that you're reminding yourselves of it all the time. Not that it overtakes your main objective, which is the win each and every Saturday. But it certainly can be a distraction that can just chip away at a team. And then before you know it, you know, if you don't have that leadership, and everybody's kind of looking for answers and, you know, you're letting teams come in and you're losing games and it can be a slippery slope.
Yeah. I think the one of the big things I want your opinion on is that you have to also be realistic. The better you play, the more it's going to happen, right? The more talk until they decide on a coach,
right?
And let alone don't be stupid and think like other schools won't come pick it. So you also got to be really hyper focused on understanding that you got to handle your business. I think that's the biggest thing with the distractions. If you don't handle your business, I can't worry about Jason until we both handle our business and we come together, then we're going to handle our business. And that's probably what made us so good, because once we got in those, like, I guess in the football offices,
right,
there was no talk of it.
Right.
No matter if somebody was going, we were just football or football or nothing else.
Yeah. I think he can't let this thing drag on, right? Like his problems, those are adult problems. You know, those are, he's 50 some years old and you have, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 year olds in that locker room. And, you know, they came to play for you. So you can't let this thing, like, you know, we talked, if you're going to take it, man up and take it, right? Like, hey, this is my alma mater. This is, you know, a place that's always been special to me. Like you said, I met my wife there, you know, blah, 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 all that stuff. But you can't leave these kids just hanging on here for the next couple months, right? Because whether you think you're doing a good job of it or not, of squashing, you know, all the talk and the rumors, the reality is these kids hear stuff, they read stuff, everything is out there nowadays. And that is just in itself, it is just one huge distraction, you know, and kids wondering, well, is coach going to be here next year? You know, I have 2 years left. You know, do I want to just bail? You know, I mean, it's just a ton of things now with obviously being able to leave and the transfer portal and NIL, all that stuff comes into play. I just think that, you know, he needs to be the adult here. If he knows and deep down, if they put an offer on the table, I think he has to address it right away, and whether he takes it or he's staying. But I think it's unfair to the kids to just let it drag on.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, we've been, I mean, heck, we both negotiated as rookies.
Right.
I mean, dealing with, I mean, you are obviously more high profile as a first round pick. I was just, you know, getting in there, but I was the last guy in my rookie class to sign. Yeah. And it wasn't by my choice.
Right. Right.
It was the Buffalo, you know, I think his name is Tessendorf or Offendorf. He was gone somewhere.
Blindman.
The GM had signed everybody else, and he must have forgot.
And then he took off.
Yeah, and then so they had to get him off of vacation before training camp and, you know, you whatever. So I think sometimes it's, like, out of your control.
Oh,
and the best thing you can do is just, you know, do it. And you know, speedy answer is going to do everybody process. But, you know, Kirk Cignetti getting paid.
Yeah.
is going to amp it up. Nebraska plays better or wins. Winning is the most important. It's going to amp up, yeah, and it's going to bring more shed lights to Nebraska. So leadership internally is going to have to be huge.
I mean, don't you think just from Penn State's perspective, they want to have their guy ASAP, right? Like they don't want this search to go on for 2-3 months. I mean, I'm sure they would love to have their guy in the next week or two, if possible.
Yeah.
I hope this thing moves quick, one way or the other. I just think it's bad to have it kind of hanging over your head. These kids, they worked hard for this year, and whether you think you're giving them the best that you can with this thing hanging over everybody's head, you ultimately can't give your
especially,
full.
I mean, I guess the only person that will know is him, his agent, and him if he has an offer yet. He doesn't have an offer yet. You just gotta, you know, you don't want to tip your hand either because you want to make sure you get paid.
I mean, I think the whole thing is crazy, really, to be honest. I mean, you fired a guy who was winning double digit, wins for the last 3 years, been there for, 13 years, and clearly has had some issues beating top 10 teams.
Sure.
But his track record is obviously, over a longer period of time. When you look at Coach Rhule and where he's been, like Temple was there for 3-4 years. Yeah. Same with Baylor, right? Yeah. Like Franklin was there for 13 years, and took a program that was kind of, we talked about it, like Bill O'Brien kind of went in and stabilized it, but by no means were they, competing for championships or anything back then. But now they're, for the last 3-4 years, they're in the conversation, at the start of each season. But I just think to fire a guy like that, and obviously the two losses, not counting the Oregon one, but the Northwestern and the UCLA were bad losses. But I just think that I could understand if this was even next year, when you look at our schedule, right? If you're going to fire a guy who has a hard time beating top 10s and hire a guy who's had trouble beating top 25 teams, to me, it doesn't make sense. Now, I get he's an alum. I don't know if that's hugely important to them. You always hear about it with Michigan, right? Like you want a Michigan guy, Michigan guy. And we did to some degree, I think, here at Nebraska. We wanted somebody that understood the culture, right? Because Nebraska culture is so much different than what everybody else has out there. So I think that was part of, the push also to have Frost come back when he did. But at the end of the day, I mean, you fire a guy like that, to me, it would seem like, well, you must have like an ace in your back pocket somewhere.
That's what we
like,
talked about,
do you have Urban on line two or something like that? Do you know what I mean? Like, is he ready to go? Are you going to open up the checkbook and bring in a guy like that? Because then I understand. I thought it was kind of a rush. It almost makes you seem like they have somebody that they wanted.
Either that or they were waiting to fire him.
Yeah.
And people say they fired him now so he couldn't turn it around.
Right.
Say you reel off six in a row,
right?
Because there's 60 games left. Then you're like 9-3,
yeah,
lost to Oregon, two bad losses. You got to keep him back. I think last year started to roll in the right direction, and then they couldn't fire him.
Right.
I think they would have asked him to leave or go somewhere else last year. It just be, based on stuff you heard. You mentioned Urban Meyer. I always talking to Austin. I think if Urban is focused to coach,
right,
for sure.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, Carlos Polk. I talked to him. He was down in Jacksonville.
Right.
That ain't the dude that was in Ohio State. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, would you hire Urban Meyer
to coach college? I think is, I think that's part of it too. Like when you look at, these guys that make the jump, they go from college to the NFL. I think they sometimes think like, I got to change who I am a little bit. Right. Like, or maybe they don't change at all. And they try to do the same stuff they did in college. Yeah. And, like you got 10-year vets in that room and stuff. And you come in there barking at them, like, for a little tiny thing, that, maybe hadn't been a big deal ever before. And maybe it's not really a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but like, you know, I mean, that's the thing you hear a lot with college coaches, right? Like you can't keep teach or you can't treat the college player the yeah. same way as you do the NFL guy.
Right.
So I'm sure that played into it. But yeah, I just, it's,
I mean, he would satisfy the,
oh yeah,
the, you know, the wine and cheese people or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just would wonder where his mind is.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah. If his mind's right.
Right.
And he wants to have that last, like,
I mean, he's got it done. I mean, he proves.
And I don't know if you've ever seen him on his Big Ten show where he gets up there and he'll break down. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
it's must see TV.
Right.
And,
right.
And I'm sure he understands where he's at, but it'd be taking a little while to get him out of the booth. It'll probably take an extra million to get him out of that.
I mean, you can't come to him with some, you know,
average offer.
you got to come some sort of like record breaking yeah. for a college coach.
Yeah. And also, I'd probably say he would probably want to come with a coaching waiting.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
All right, I'm going to give you 4 years. We're going to get in the national title hunt. I'm going to turn it over to Brian Hartline or something like that because his name is it. So.
Yeah. And make no mistake about it. Like if Urban went there, they would be immediate national title contenders.
Right. Just on GP.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Me and Austin were joking. If I took over the head coach and we took all these people in the station, Penn State would still be ranked preseason top 10.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer, it would be probably top four just because of the Urban Meyer effect. So we got about 5 minutes before we go to take our first break. We'll dive into the game second one. What was your thoughts on the Maryland game, first road game or true road game? But it was able to come out with a, you know, last drive victory.
Yeah, I mean it's good to get the win. You know, it'd been something obviously that we'd struggle with. You know, last kind of drive sort of deal, and they didn't play great, I thought, in the second half, but they found something there towards the end. You don't like seeing that's the second week in a row where they came out of the half and
flat.
Just disappeared for the entire third quarter, which, you know, I mean, coach always used to tell us like, hey, one of the most important drives in the entire game is that first drive in the third quarter, right? Like we need to get a stop on defense and we need to move the ball on offense. So that's concerning because it's, you start to ask, well, what's happening in the locker room or what type of adjustments are they making or lack of adjustments? But that's just, for me, that's concerning because when you play good teams, and when I say good teams, I mean guys, you know, teams that are competing for conference championships and stuff like that. And I think Maryland is a good young team, obviously good young quarterback, some good young players, but I don't think, nobody's getting them confused with Ohio State.
Right, yeah.
And the same with Michigan State. You know, Michigan State's probably a 6-7 win team,
yeah,
I would guess, at most. So, yeah, I mean, even with the schedule being easy this year, you know, you still have some challenges no matter who you're playing, and you'd like to see them improve in some of those areas.
Yeah, real quick, do you think that's a inexperienced thing? I mean, we were always kind of like, you know, you came from Jersey, I came to Minnesota. Right. We just kind of locked and loaded.
Right.
It was kind of already.
Right.
You think that's an experience thing that you got to see it, understand it, work on it, do it.
Like coming out of the half?
Yeah. Like you got to like, I think if you recognize it, right.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
you know, it's like getting better on third down. Right. Yeah. You know, it's like sometimes Charlie used to hammer on, like, we got to communicate. We got to be better at it. We got to really lock a, you know, run a quarterback in. You know, no down and distance.
Right.
Until you really recognize it, I think that, you know, you got to do that.
And you know how it is when you get into the locker room and you're sitting down for, you know, 10, 15 minutes or whatever. And if guys don't know how to get themselves ready, you know, then that becomes an issue. And I don't know if they know. I've never been in the locker room with this team at halftime. So I don't know everything that they're doing. Don't know how they're hydrating, that stuff is taken into consideration. But are they talking just as a defense, as an offense, or is Terry Braden taking them and, yeah. and you know, doing more with the D line? I would guess so. Obviously, yeah. you know, that's pretty much coaching 101 yeah. is, you know, you're going to
pros before.
Right.
Just recently.
Yeah, I mean, that's all, there's a million different factors that go into it, and it's something that I think I would guess that they're looking at this point. They've got to be able to recognize that as yeah. well as a coaching staff. Hey, we're disappearing in the third quarter. Like, yeah. you know, if we play a good team, you know, they could score 21 points in the third quarter and, you know, we're screwed here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that probably because the coaches are adults, they recognize it. They're going to, I think that's probably one thing you can't lean on these players yet. You're going right. to have to like
right.
take a Jason Peter, Jay Foreman or Austin and kind of
right.
hold, you know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Yeah.
Like whether it's pull them aside in the locker room
yeah.
and say, all right, enough's enough. Right. We're halfway through the season. We need to come out of this locker room on fire. So this is what we have to do right. until it becomes a learned behavior. Because you don't want that, because you don't always, one thing I always I'll say is that you don't ever want to be like that cardiac team, like right. one drive, like,
right. right.
You, yeah. you know, cause it's, you see it in the NFL all the time. The Chiefs went 15-2 last year, 15-2. And then what, 10 games, Austin, by one score or like,
yeah, it was yeah. a lot. I mean, like, them and the Vikings a yeah. couple years ago. Yeah,
the
ago.
Vikings a couple years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah.
You know, you win 9 1 score games, and then it's you know this yeah. in league. Then the next year,
oh yeah,
you lose 7 yeah. of those, and then everybody's like, "What happened?" So you want to make sure you're able to, especially against a team like Minnesota.
I mean, we talked about it. Like, is there such a huge difference between when you look at, say, the Frost team that lost, you know, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 games or whatever by like 3 points or 6 points, right? Like, it is literally the bounce of the ball, right? Yeah. It is a fingertip that gets up from a D lineman that just barely grazes yeah. the ball. That changes, you know, whether or not you're going to win that game or yeah. lose that game. So, yeah, it's great the fact that they've been able to figure it out yeah. here in the last few weeks, right? But I don't know if it's such a glaring yeah. difference, right? Because like what you just said, sometimes the ball bounces your way, sometimes you get that tip, sometimes
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. so yeah, for me, I got to see more long-term kind of sustained success
yeah.
to really kind of say, all right, you know what? Now they get it, right? Yeah. They understand. And this is a different team. But for me, it's just, you know, young guys, maybe a few better players that they have, just end up making some plays
yeah.
and you know, maybe that's all you need. I yeah. don't know.
I mean, there's you need better players. You know, I think
$30 to $40 million roster type better players.
They can get me and you for like half, less than a quarter of that.
Well, if they're paying for a $30 to $40 million roster every year, and I'm not saying this necessarily as like a direct shot at Coach Rule or anything, but we don't need a coach then for $10 million a year either.
Yeah.
You and I go in there both. We'll give them the Lincoln discount here, okay? And we go in there, and, you know, you just need somebody who kind of an organizer, a little bit of motivator, you know, make yeah. sure. But, I mean, if you got studs all over the field.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, actually.
I'm not trying to minimize how important it is to be a coach. I'm just yeah. saying, like, that's never really been anybody can go out and buy a team.
Yeah.
You know, like – I mean, as long as you're in that competitive area, I think, then, you know, like kids got to work for it.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like develop players, do that sort of thing, come up with great game plans, be a great, you know, culture kind of team, have great leaders, that sort of thing. And I don't think you have to break the bank every single year. And on top of it, we're in Lincoln, Nebraska. How long can you sustain that, having, you know, asking
yeah.
that type of money to be coming into the program year in, year out? I just don't see it as something that, I mean, we talk about wanting to turn this thing around, right? And when we say that means, you know, for more than just 1 or 2 years, yeah. right? Like, we want kind of long-term sustained success. So I think there has to be a little more of a plan than just
yeah
buying the most expensive players.
Yeah, it'd be, well, I think it'd be hard just to do in Lincoln in general,
right?
Just because, you know, to be honest with you, Jason, I don't even think if you just take the top 300 kids in football, like high school or or transfer portal, I don't know if they do 100 or whatever it is. I don't even think they're trying to win anyways.
Right. No.
They'll go play for like Sacramento State because they got some money just because they, if they could get an extra $10,000. So that's where you got to.
Most of them have like, you know, something like, you know, NFL, you know, like their goal is the NFL.
Yeah,
it's certainly not necessarily to come to college, win championships. Yeah. Like they want to get paid and they want to go to the NFL. Right.
And then they wanted to have the easiest path to do so.
Right. And it's funny, you know, like every time the draft comes on and they look at like, you know, the first rounders or whatever, or, you know, the top three rounds, and they'll say, you know, what star this kid was coming out. And the majority of them are not like five stars, right? They're three stars.
Yeah.
Kids that have chips on their shoulders and want to prove that they can play with anybody. So, you know, the high school thing is so skewed, I think, you know, because the level of competition that each team is playing, it's different, you know, for the schools in Jersey that they're playing compared to the ones in Nebraska. And it's different, you know, from the ones in Florida and Texas and everything like that. So it's hard. I mean, we've all seen, everybody I'm sure has seen the video of the Manning kid, right? Like,
Arch.
Yeah. Excuse me. And they show like, you know, one of like the D linemen chasing him or something in his high school game. Yeah. I mean, the kid's probably like 5'8", like 175 pounds, soaking wet and sloppy.
Yeah.
Like can't run. Do you know what I mean? Like this, you know, like, yeah, I mean, of course he's going to look really good, you know, playing against that level of competition. So I don't know how much sometimes of a difference there is, say, between this great five-star player and, you know, a really good three-star or four-star. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
but there's going to be a difference in what you're paying that guy to come to school.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy just because you can potentially your way into becoming a millionaire where we had to really grind it. So we'll take a quick break, come back. We'll talk about the Minnesota run game. We saw it up and close and personal a couple years ago. We'll ask Jason what it's like to go against, I call it a tight inside-outside zone. And some of the things to look for Friday night. Jay Foreman, Jason Peter, Austin, we'll be right back.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're back. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Jason Peter, second segment, excuse me. Gonna dive into a little Minnesota. Obviously, me and Jason have talked. This is not the same Minnesota team of yesteryears with, you know, the big Paul Bunyan offensive lineman able to just lean on you, but they still run kind of the same concepts. And I don't think people, I call it a tight inside outside zone based on, it seemed like they always had real tight splits with their offensive line, and they really ran the ball real tight. And you only know this when you go against it.
Right.
I always refer back when we played the Bengals, and they kind of ran the same thing, and they had Corey Dillon.
Right.
So that made it even harder, but it always felt like they could just lean on you and bleed you at the end of the game. So for our listeners, Jason, talk about how hard it is from a defensive lineman standpoint, going against a team with tight splits, but then also back when Minnesota's offensive line was really good, were able to move you off the ball too.
Yeah, it's tough. You're just limited with space in there. And when those offensive linemen get really tight together, and a lot of them, you know, a lot of the blocking schemes will start off with combo blocks, and then they'll work to the linebacker. And sometimes the guy that you're playing, like if you're a three technique and you're outside shoulder of that guard, but you have this tackle that's basically foot to foot with the guard, sometimes the tackle will hit you first.
Yeah.
Right. But your hands are going to the guard. That kind of throws it throws you off. Like you're not, I mean, you're kind of expecting something like that to happen, but usually you count on where your hands are going. That's going to be first impact, right? Yeah. But so it's hard when that tackle kind of just bumps you a little bit and then throws off your hand placement, and your kind of weight is out of whack there a little bit. They kind of, you know, get you, they want to get you down inside, and then easy for the guard to just overtake you, and then the tackle can get up to the linebacker. And, you know, when it comes to pass rush, then you obviously don't have as much room in there, you know, so head fakes and stuff like that, it becomes difficult. You really got to be strong inside. You got to be able to move guys, power rushes, you know, bull rushes, that sort of thing. the outside guys really need to be have an impact on rushing the quarterback in games like that. When you have an offensive line with tight splits, the outside guys really need to step up.
Yeah, I mean, we watched a game against Ohio State. I mean, those guys destroyed Minnesota. But I always talked about Jason as PJ Fleck, for whatever reason, loved to run to the boundary.
Yeah,
you know, the short side of the field, and had success against everybody.
Yeah.
In your opinion, why is that so successful? Is it because they have a softer edge? Because generally people keep a corner over there and don't flip their DBs, and then that therefore corner's not trying to, you know, take on anybody, right, and step in for the run.
And I think also I don't see it as much. I don't see as many teams playing like with the wide nine guys that we had, right? So the defensive ends are a little tighter to the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And if you have good O tackles, which Minnesota had, you know, for years, where you can kind of reach and you can scoop those guys and pin those defensive ends inside. Now you've cut off everything. Everybody has been cut off, you know, so now you're just left out there, maybe with an outside linebacker in a corner, you know, and who knows who they're pulling from the backside, you know, if they got an H-back or something in motion, someone else that's coming out to help block. And I think they just then get, they kind of turn a short field into an advantage for them with numbers.
Right.
It's something, you know, you got to be strong with your technique. You got to be lined up right. You got to know what they're trying to do to you, and you know, the plays that they like. You got to make sure you're ready to defend them.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about fundamentals going to be key for this defense going forward, just period. But more importantly, against a team like Minnesota that probably is undermanned personnel wise for the first time in this matchup.
Right.
They don't have a dude over there either on the line, running back, or receiver. So they're going to really try to lean on and try to get you to beat yourself. Talk about the nuances, and or really before that, talk about tell us when did you really realize, you're like, all right, my technique is good enough. Now I can unleash.
So I always thought as a sophomore, when I first started, that and Charlie was like, look, you and Christian, like, you guys from tackle to tackle, like inside, like, you take care of the run, you know, like, we have other guys that can kind of, you know, bring the heat. So for the most part, my first year, and, you know, we've talked about like first year starting, it's like, you're just crossing your feet. Like, you just don't want to screw up, you know, because you did not want to get embarrassed. You didn't want to get yanked off the field. You didn't want to lose your starting job. I mean, there were a ton of things, but you needed to be technically sound. Like, that was important to our coaches, like the right foot. You know, if you're supposed to step with the right foot at a 45, you know, then you step with the right foot at a 45. If you're stepping sideways, you know, Charlie's going to have an earful. And the same, you know, with linebackers and everything. But my junior year, like, when I broke my hand at Texas Tech, and I basically had to club pretty much my entire hand. I think I had like my thumb and my pointer finger and my middle finger sticking out of this cast. But I was at that point, I was like, there's only one way that I'm going to be able to survive, you know, with basically one and a quarter hand. And that's, I have to have my hands have to be shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
Like, I've got to get off the ball and my hands have to be so quick. And that was really what started for me, like, being, and then, you know, eventually, you know, you get cast off, but you're still playing that way. Yeah. Now you got two full hands, and it just became that really, I think, elevated, you know, my game and being able to play technique the way it was supposed to be. Like, really, like, it didn't matter, you know, run or pass. Like, I always tried to come off the ball the same way initially. But, you know, with the hands, and just, you know, a lot of guys, when they pick up their hand out of their stance, they want to cock their arms first, and then they want to shoot them onto the offensive lineman. And they just got to learn, you know, it's boom, right from the ground, it's got to come up. And that's just repetition. That's, you know, going home after practice, after training table, after workouts, all that stuff, after the recovery, going home and kneeling in front of the wall in your kitchen and just boom, boom, you know, hands, just over and over and over. I mean, you know, that doesn't matter what technique you're doing. This is repetition. You've got to beat it into your skull, into your brain. And yeah, so that was the biggest difference, I think, in my time here at Nebraska, where I elevated. And, you know, it was really a predicament where my game could have went the other way.
But
I was able to find a positive in all that. And I think it just ultimately then made me a better player.
Yeah. When you look at Nebraska's D line or first, second level, but just, they kind of have a different personnel depending on who they're playing, probably going to play some bare front.
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm assuming, 12 personnel, big linemen. Who do you think needs to have a good game tomorrow night in order for Nebraska to get the victory?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Judy needs to play well. Van Poppel needs, the whole D-line needs to play well. The front seven, they all do. And the safeties, you know, I thought some of the safety play last week, I thought there were some bad angles that they were taking. They were missed tackles. They were not hitting the hole right. So, you know, they all need to play well. I mean, you know, P.J. Fleck has been, He has started the game warfare long before this week. It started back at Big Ten Media Days, right? When he was talking about how great Nebraska looks.
Yeah.
Coaches just don't say, like, there's a reason why they say everything, you know? And he was working the psychology already of this game.
Yeah.
You know, he wants us to feel like we're so much better than them, you know, because then they get into it. They want to make it a dogfight. They want to, you know, 3 yards, cloud of dust sort of thing. They want to slow this thing down. They don't want it to be, you know, throwing the ball all over the place. But yeah, I mean, he started the kind of mental warfare, I think, months ago.
Yeah. I mean, from the, what was this one before? This was a culture win.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Coach Rule won here, but from the first time Nebraska went up there and Coach Rule's first year, now I'm sure he's been having this thing circled because Nebraska's ranked. If Minnesota wants to get back in national kind of the mix or just in good graces, you win on Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
And they love to play on Friday night.
You know, I don't want to switch topics here, but I know we're getting short on time, and I know Austin is a big Savannah Bananas fan, and I would like to talk to him about this whole thing with Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, we will. We're going to take a quick break, come back. We're going to cue Austin. We're going to quiz Austin and put him in the hot seat about the Savannah. What is it called?
Savannah Bananas.
Yeah, I didn't even know about it when Jason texted me, but we'll be right back.
Chippendales with baseball gloves.
Jason Peter, Jay Foreman, Austin, we'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Back, quick segment before we get to the 5 o'clock hour. Jay Foreman, Jason Peter, Austin Orman. We might have to nickname this segment the hot seat for Austin, since I was not aware that the Savannah Bananas,
there you go,
are coming to Lincoln
Memorial Stadium.
Because I thought originally, at least DP said that they were supposed to come in the summer, and then that didn't happen, right?
They are coming in the summer.
Right when the College World Series starts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've just been out the loop, but it's official, right? It's official.
They will play Thursday at Hawks Field at Haymarket Park, and then Saturday at Memorial Stadium.
Yeah.
Is that a day off for the College World Series?
Oh, no. Thursday is opening ceremonies, and Saturday is the day one of Pool 2.
So, for me, the problem is, okay, building revenue, right? That's kind of been the excuse for this thing, right? So is building revenue more than having the kids look at that field like it's sacred ground? And maybe if they feel like there's something special to that field, they'd be more likely to defend it. Whereas we let pretty much everybody come in here over the last 30 years and take whatever they want out of Memorial Stadium, which is disappointing. You know, you're supposed to, I mean, this is your field, right? Like this is Nebraska corn, like the legends and the ghosts and all that stuff, the guys that have played out there before. And now you have Chippendales with baseball gloves coming in there. Right. And what, for money? Well, I'm sorry, but we pay Troy Dannon $1.8 million or something like that, basically $2 million a year. Use your brain, right, that we're paying you to use, and figure out other ways to build revenue. Now, some people might say, but there have been concerts. Look, I got no problem. The girls, when they did that event, absolutely. Those are UNL girls, right? They are part of the school. They are part of the athletic program, and they're great at what they do, right? They are, you make the argument that they're the best at what they do. I just think bringing in, you know, like the Harlem Globetrotters and letting them, you know, play. I just think some things have to remain sacred. Right. And I just think if the kids see that, like, hey, we just don't let anybody come in here. I mean, there's a 50,000 seat stadium up in Omaha that they could certainly play at. Right. Like, I don't understand why it's got to be here at Memorial Stadium. I just to me, it's just, you know, it's not. And I used the reference. I said it'd be one thing. OK, World Cup comes around. They want a location. You're talking about the best of the best players in the world. Right. Mm-hmm. These guys, and it's not a knock. I have nothing against the Savannah Bananas. I really don't. Right. But it's mostly guys made up of, I'm guessing the team is made up of guys that didn't make it to the Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's kind of like this second rate, you know, athlete that you're letting go out there and it's baseball, you know, it's not even football. So, yeah, I have an issue with it. To me, I would like to see Memorial Stadium become sacred again. You know, and does that mean that you can't have a concert in there from time to time? No, I mean, Garth Brooks performed there when we were students there.
And he came back not long ago.
Right. And but you're talking about, you know, some of these entertainers that are the best at what they do. Right. To me, this is just, it's a total money grab. And you just hate to see, you know, certain things that have been sacred to this university, to this football program, just kind of fall by the wayside.
No, I really appreciate that perspective. And I can't ever feel like that's my home the same way you two did.
Right.
You know, I can say they let a Yahoo like me down on the field to do a radio broadcast from there. And right. I'm ever appreciative of that fact. And you're right. It is a money grab. I mean, there's no denying that. I've been on the side of, if money is the way that Nebraska thinks it needs to compete, that's the way college athletics is trending. I mean, can we agree that money's the biggest resource right now?
Money is important, but we also don't know if this will be sustainable, right? Like, we're all kind of crossing our fingers that the NCAA wakes up here and starts to put some regulation in.
Yeah, not happening anytime soon. Still on that sleeping pill. So I, again, without being able to feel the same, you know, depth of the sacred for Memorial Stadium as you guys do. I mean, I grew up here. I've been in my fair share of Husker games. I've been on the field. That's home for you guys. It should be cool and like awe-inspiring for people like me to walk out there and like, holy cow, you know, who else has set foot maybe in this exact patch of turf that I did? Right. It's been replaced, right. Whatever. And like, right. I totally understand that. I can't argue too strongly against it. I get why Nebraska is doing it. I can understand why you wouldn't want it there.
It's a sign, and there have been some other things, the All-American pictures that were once taken down by Billy C and Stevie P have also been taken down again now and are nowhere to be seen except in a closet up in the fourth floor, an electrical closet.
And that's not right.
No, that's not right. And you know what? Maybe if we had an All-American from time to time, right? I mean, what happens if one of these kids that's down there right now becomes an All-American, right? Like, wouldn't you want, even as a coach, as an athletic, wouldn't you want him displayed down there? You know, a nice portrait that they do of all the All-Americans, but they're not. They're up in a fourth floor closet, an electrical closet, all these oil paintings, just waiting for some spark to come out of like a generator or something. And the whole building's going to go up. You know, I just think it's do not forget who we are, where we came from. Don't disrespect.
You wouldn't be here without it.
Don't disrespect the guys that blood, sweat, and tears and all. You know, like, there's got to be something that I think are off limits.
Sure. I'm with
Fair
it.
Fair enough.
I'm with it. Yeah. Which is why it makes sense, I think, that they're playing the first one at Haymarket Park.
There's multiple games.
Yeah, so Thursday is at Haymarket.
Okay.
And then Saturday is at Memorial. Which, when I heard they announced the game at Memorial, my first thought was, well, why don't you just play it at the baseball stadium?
Right.
Which they're doing then? First. But, I mean, 10, 11 times more people.
Yeah, but only if
which
it's
is to Jason's
day.
Point, the money grab.
Yeah. Right.
And it's not even an off day. So.
Oh, that, well, yeah, that's why. Because they do take a break in baseball, right? Like the World Series, they do have a – is that Sunday?
Well, just travel day.
Yeah.
Travel day. Yeah.
No, I'm saying during the College World Series, they do take a – I mean, it all depends.
Well, at the end, I mean, it's alternate, but you'll have – because you have like the two different groups of four that alternate their days until they get the mandatory day off at the end and then the championship series.
I thought it was,
but this is the very start.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I didn't even know. I didn't know about the.
Yeah, they're down again.
Yeah, I didn't.
Not good. Not good.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know. I don't even know. Like,
don't you want? I mean, your players to be walking through the hallways and see stuff like that. Like, I want my picture up there. I remember that. You know, those pictures used to be right outside our locker room, right? Yeah. Like, so
something
You walked by them all. Absolutely, something to work for, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about getting a bag. Right. It's not just about the money. Like at the end of the day, nobody's going to remember how much money, you know, that they gave you. Right. Like there's only one guy that we all kind of would remember for a while. And that's Dylan. Right. Because he's getting $3+ million a year. But like I couldn't tell you what Ja'Cory Barney's making. Right. But I'll always remember if he becomes an All-American and his picture's up there in the stadium.
Mm-hmm. I used to always see. Remember Wondermont?
Yeah. Oh, that fro he had on there.
Incredible. Maybe the best Husker afro.
It's the inspiration right now, Wondermons. I just remember looking like Wondermons.
And, you know, like obviously the stadium, the building has changed, right? Like, and I think those portraits kind of all like had the thick, like mahogany kind of frame. Yeah. Hey, you want to modernize it? Then you just go buy new frames, you know, go down to Michael's or whatever and get some new frames, you know, you put the portraits in glass or something, you know, to make it fit the building. But I just think it's disrespectful to all the guys. And I mean, there's a whole wall of guys, you know, from the time that Nebraska first walked out onto the field. I just think it's something that should be used as motivation for guys, you know,
inspiration, respect, honor, all that stuff.
Yeah, they have the captain's pictures up there too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I see my ugly mug up in there. Yeah. Bald headed too.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Yeah, Jason, what do you think he's let the hair go?
He looks good.
Hey.
Yeah.
Right.
Farley.
Dave was my inspiration to start wearing a hat. They just started growing his hair. I was like, what the heck, man?
Farley tried to tell us that we didn't look good with bald heads.
Oh,
I said, Farley, you're the only one that didn't look good with a bald head. Yeah. Little dude. Anyways, appreciate you stopping in. You're off the volleyball, right?
Yeah, got a freshman volleyball game to go to.
Anyways, we'll see you next week. Jay Foreman, Jason Peter, Austin. We'll be right back.